Welcome to Behind the Panels, Issue 16, the comic book podcast that has 16 points of articulation. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm the very articulated David McFay. How are you, Richard?
I'm articulated, David.
You've chosen a very strange book for this week. Can I just tell you that?
You crack me up, little buddy.
What's on the schedule for this week, Richard?
Well, this week, it's Batman Earth 1 is coming, TV's Green Arrow gets his Black Canary, the New West is headed to the big screen, The Walking Dead game, and your chance to win some Blu-rays.
Oh, good, because we don't have enough zombie games already.
That's true.
Now, hold on, did you just say win something?
You can win something on this show. Stay tuned for that bit later in the show, and we'll tell you how you can win some Blu-rays.
Oh, crap. Is that costing us anything?
Plus, kick-ass pick of the week, Sam and Mac surfing the highway.
Yeah, little buddy. Let's do it.
But first, I'm taking you back to 1993 with our vintage clip of the week.
Oh, cool.
Friends! Friends, we've only gone out together 3 times, and already you're telling me you just want to be friends? You never gave me a chance, and for that, you'll fry like a pork sausage.
It's not that I don't like you, it's just that, well, you're too nice a guy, I guess. I think I'd rather go out with someone more of the unpredictable.
Hello.
This doesn't look like the Lincoln Tunnel, Sam.
Looks to me like a marginally volatile hostage situation, Max.
Ooh, does this mean we get to kick some puffy white mad scientist butt?
Can't think of a reason not to.
You'll be of no use, freelance police. With the flip of a lever, my ungrateful lunch date will be reduced to a half cup of disoriented atomic matter.
I knew he wasn't a real doctor.
Shall I confront, subdue, and pummel the suspected perpetrator, Sam?
Sick him up, little buddy.
Ooh! Ow!
Hey, nice one.
Yikes!
Huh?
He's not a real guy, Sam. Can I keep his head for a souvenir? Why do you suppose it's picky?
That's no head, Max. It's one damned ugly time bomb. Let's leave this criminal cesspool pronto.
Good idea, Sam. Maybe we can ditch the head somewhere while the credits are running. Mind if I drive?
Not if you don't mind me clawing at the dash and shrieking like a cheerleader.
Sam, is pronto a real word?
Goodbye, Sam and Max. I'll never forget all you've done here today.
Subatomic matter.
You'll fry like a pork sausage.
Okay, little buddy.
That was, of course, from the 1993 awesome LucasArts computer game, Sam and Max Hit the Road, which is very appropriate because we're doing the classic collection of Sam and Max comics as our pick of the week.
Indeed we are. So, my question to you is, how many of the Sam and Max games did you play?
I've played them all, David.
Oh, you are a seriously sick and twisted individual.
I've got the animated series on DVD. I'm looking for a decent plush toy at this point.
Now, would you be totally ashamed of me if I told you I didn't actually know they made an animated series out of it?
Oh, I don't think it was sort of a blink and you'll miss it series. They only ran for a handful of episodes, and they luckily they put it out on DVD a few years ago. But it was I don't think it really screened much here in Australia.
No, I've never heard of it, so I must seek that out.
Indeed,
indeed, indeed. All right, Richard. So, what have you been reading this week?
Well, I've been catching up on a few things this week, David, apart from rereading Sam and Max, which is always a delight. I started catching up with a few of the New 52 that I hadn't really given much of a go. I read Resurrection Man, which I hadn't even thought to. I can't even say Resurrection Man without giggling a little bit. And I actually found myself really enjoying it for some reason. It could be the fact that there's two nubile women that run around half naked throughout it.
Well, there's that. I also love the fact that he keeps dying in horrible ways and then just kind of coming back. You know,
it's like, look, I'm surprised. At first, I looked at that title and thought, I'm surprised that wasn't one of the ones that got killed off at the start of the second wave of the New 52, but it's actually getting really quite good. And one of the other titles that I started reading was Red Lanterns, which I know you'd been recommending.
Yeah, I've been reading that since the first one. I'm all up to date on that. So, how are you finding Red Lanterns in general, though?
I think it's a pretty good story. I really like the idea. I think you said it best a few weeks ago when it was the main character that is actually quite fascinating. And now that he's sort of bringing more of the Red Lanterns into a sentient state, it's becoming a more interesting book.
Well, and he's kind of digging his own hole, isn't he? Because he goes, I want company, so I wake one of them up so that they can talk to me. But then he doesn't like what they're saying, so he wakes another one up. But now he thinks they're conspiring against him.
Yeah.
It's this crisis of conscience, because his mission out of all the lanterns is very, very easy. It's all about rage, you know? And now he's doubting everything that he does. And I think that actually makes it very interesting. That is one of the books that follows continuity on from the old universe, because Atrocicus actually comes from the War of the Colors. What was that called? The last series of Green Lanterns where they had the war with all the various colored rings.
Oh, look, I forgot.
I forget what they call it. But anyway, that's where that character came out
of. Let's call it the Color War.
The Color War. What the hell? So that character came out. And I was actually really intrigued when I saw the New 52. They'd given that.
That wasn't the Brightest Day stuff, was it?
It was, kind of. It was all part of that. It was like one event.
The whole Blackest Night, Brightest Day thing.
Yeah, it was like one event after another it was all the Sinestro Corps War and Blackest Day and Brightest Night. All of that was all kind of one right after another.
And, well, in fact, the entire Green Lantern section of the new DCU is unchanged.
With the exception of New Guardians, which I can't quite figure out.
Well, it seems to be...
Some of it seems to be in continuity, and yet they talk about Carl Reiner like he's new. You know, so it's a bizarre mixture of the two, and I haven't quite put my finger down. I'm actually not a big fan of New Guardians.
No, I've sort of put that to the side for a moment. I've been getting back into the Super books, of course, and they're all pretty fabulous. Superboy, Supergirl, Superman.
Superboy's growing on me.
Superboy, the first few issues took me a while to get into, but now that he's kind of out and loose and proud, I'm pretty happy.
He's fabulous.
He's bad. He's out there and he's loving every minute of it, David.
One-star review.
Yeah, I just outed Superboy.
Yeah,
so.
There you go. I've been
there's your scoop for this show.
I've been reading Volume 2 of Powers.
Right, yep.
And I'm happy to announce that Volume 2, because they actually shifted companies now, so now they're on the Icon label, which was that publisher-run label. You know, there was, I think it was part of Marvel. But they haven't lost any of their edge. It's really, really good. I was a little bit worried about going into it, actually, because as I told you, the very end of Volume 1 has that very strange storyline where it starts with cavemen and works its way up.
That's right.
Kind of explaining Christian's backstory. And so I was kind of wondering, you know, are we going to be able to come back from that, blah, blah, blah. And they just start strong. They just go straight into it. And the current mystery at the moment, of course, is Retro Girl seems to be back.
Right, which, of course, new listeners to the show will be interested to know that we covered Who Killed Retro Girl storyline.
Which is the first six issues.
Which is the first six issues, all the way back in issue 8 of this podcast. Go back and check that out if you haven't already. And if you have, check it out again.
Check it out again. And if you aren't reading Powers, go out and get yourself some Powers. This is a great series. Sorry?
It really is. It really is.
And it's very, very strong. And where they're taking the characters at the moment is very interesting, because it's a very different world because of the events of the last volume. So, like, at this point in time in the first quarter of Volume 2, superpowers are now illegal. And so it's actually the whole world, because basically all the supervillains have taken control because they don't care about the law. And all the superheroes are basically living in like reservations, like the Indian reservations, because they're not allowed to use their powers.
That's pretty cool.
It's actually really good. So do go out and check that out. And of course, I also read Sam and Max. So that was a big read. There's actually it's 152 pages or something, that collection.
It ran for a while. We'll talk about it a bit more later.
We'll come back to that.
There's about 15 years worth of stuff in there.
Yeah, you kind of feel the generations going by. Your hair is graying. You're actually getting wrinkles as you read it.
Yeah, well, these were some of my formative years, which may explain much about me.
Yeah, I actually have a better understanding of you right now. And when I look into your mind, all I see is...
It's really dark in here.
You too, huh?
Yeah. Now, I believe. Now, when are we doing this competition thing? You've got me fascinated.
We're doing the competition. We'll do that after the movie news. So let's whip through comic news and movie news. So for those of you who have probably linked through to this podcast just to find out the question,
I'll put the time code in the show notes.
You're gonna have to wait a little longer.
I won't put the time code in the show notes. We want you to listen. Trust me, people. I want to know about this too.
All for Cyrus.
Shall David, we talk some news?
Comic news.
What a scoop!
This has been a really dead week.
I'm just scrounging around looking for something to put in here. More has happened in the movie world this week than the comics. We just had about 4 weeks worth of really big announcements, and this week it's like, there's some books coming out.
We should announce very quickly that the Marvel superhero line from Lego is now introducing Deadpool. There you go.
Yes.
There's some news.
That's worth... and I think your son was saying... just before the start of the show, that to buy the lot of them, it's going to set you back about $150.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
it's not a cheap hobby.
It's not a cheap hobby, but you know what? They're cool.
They are cool. Definitely cool. The Deadpool looks really good. He showed me the picture just before the show, and it's like, oh, that's neat. All right, tell me what there is news this week.
Well, long-time listeners to the show will remember way back in issue 6 we reviewed Superman's Secret Origin, which was a story by none other than Gary Frank did the art and Jeff Johns wrote the story. And it was a new take on – it was one of the many new takes on the Superman origin story.
It was a new take.
And we weren't entirely satisfied with where it went, particularly the Legion stuff. But now with the new 52, all bets are off and, all origin stories are kind of defunct now. But there's this thing – but there was another story that was done. It was sort of an Elseworlds book called Superman Earth 1. And that came out – oh, about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that book. That was a J. Michael Straczynski. That was really good.
That's right. But now the same team who did Superman's Secret Origins have got together to do Batman Earth 1, and that's been stuck, and it's been sort of coming for a while now. It was meant to come out in June, but it's now just been announced in the July solicitations for DC Comics, and it's going to come out as a hardcover, 144-page hardcover. So I think I know exactly what we'll be doing in the first week of July.
I think I know what our review that week will be.
Yes. And look, it looks pretty good. And it's been advertised as, in the tradition of Superman Earth 1, the spectacular original graphic novel gives new insight into Bruce Wayne's transformation into Batman and his first year as the Dark Knight. In this all-new take on the Batman mythos, Bruce Wayne is on the hunt for his parents' killer, his target, the mayor of Gotham City, plus...
Dun-dun-dun.
Plus, who is Alfred Pennyworth, and why is he so determined to put an end to the Batman?
Huh?
Huh? Your parents had trusted you.
Yeah, exactly. That's amazing.
Being most precious to them.
Why would Alfred be hunting him? All right, I'm confused. We've got to read this book.
And why has Alfred got his pants off? Bruce Wayne, stamp collector? A secret into why bats can fly.
That's the one thing I love about these Earth 1 books is they can literally get away with anything they want. It's not Bruce Wayne at all.
Find out why Bruce Wayne really liked peanut butter and jelly. That's the thing. I mean, look, you know, origin stories are great. There's only so many times you can retell the Batman origin story. I mean, the thing is, superheroes kind of have to reinvent themselves every few generations just to remain relevant. And that's fine. The great thing about Batman and Superman is that their core origin story hasn't really changed. But there's just been little updates to make it more relevant every now and then. And I think that's fine. And something like Earth 1, which is actually set in its own little bubble, these are completely self-contained stories where you don't need to have reference to the main DCU.
Hmm. Now, you were telling me before the show that there might be a sequel to Superman Earth 1.
Yeah, well, that's what the other ones that's been kicking around for a while, and that the next Earth 1 kind of book after Batman Earth 1 is, you know, to be announced, but it's Superman Earth 1. book two or something.
It kind of defeats the purpose of being self-contained, doesn't it? If they make more of them.
The sequel to the greatest standalone novel of all time. It's kind of like Before Watchmen, really.
Yeah, a little bit. Now, comic book news is light. I believe we've got some movie news, though.
Certainly do.
So let's have this. All right.
Okay.
That voice just gets me hot every time. Can I just
tell you about it? And it's me, so imagine how hot it gets me.
Don't deflate my bubble, please.
Now, we've been following this story for some time because, frankly, I'm obsessed with Green Arrow. But as you know, there's
you?
A Green Arrow.
No.
Yeah, I know. It was shocking to me, too. or should I just say? But we've been following this story for a while now. This is the Green Arrow pilot that the CW is doing, and it's just going to be called Arrow. As we already know, Stephen Amell is playing Green Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Now Katie Cassidy has been cast as Dinah Laurel Lance in the series, who, as we know, if you're followers of the comic book, Dinah Laurel Lance is Black Canary.
Right. Now I know this Katie Cassidy from something.
Now, she's been in a bunch of stuff. I most recently saw her in the movie Monte Carlo, where she was the really funny one. And when I actually wrote my review for that thing over on therealbits.com, when I wrote my review for that film, I actually singled her out as one of the single funniest things in it. But she was great. She's a really good character actress, I think. So she'll bring a lot to this. They've actually changed the character a little bit for this, as they did for the Birds of Prey, very short-lived Birds of Prey series about 10 years ago.
Right, I remember that series.
That series made Dinah Lance a kid with psychic powers for some reason.
That's right.
Now they've actually made her like a high-flying lawyer who's trying to stick it to the 1%. So she obviously shares some of the left-leaning attitude that Green Arrow has. But if they make him the billionaire that they've if they make Oliver Queen the billionaire industrialist that they've made him in the current run of the comics, where Q-Corps seems to be in absolutely every book, then maybe they'll initially start off as a bit of a rivalry, you know, as her kind of trying to stick it to Oliver Queen but not really knowing that he's secretly Green Arrow. I imagine that's where it's going to go.
I'm just looking through her credit list.
Yeah,
because I'm looking at her going, I know her from somewhere, and I didn't see Monte Carlo. And I got to say, I'm proud to say that I've never watched an episode of Gossip Girl. And her other big claim to fame would have been Melrose Place and Supernatural. Melrose Place, I don't really remember that much because it was like, you know, it was like Silly Putty at the time. And Supernatural, I've never really watched. But I do know her face. And I'm looking at her going, where do I know her from? For those who have seen, she was actually in the remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street. And she was in Taken.
That's right.
And she was
she the daughter in Taken?
Yeah, no. She was the daughter's friend.
Oh, that's right. She was the daughter's friend.
And she was also in the Adam Sandler film Click. So I have seen her and stuff. I'm looking at her going, she's so familiar to me, and yet I couldn't pick where I've seen her from. Because all these things that they say she's famous for, I haven't seen. But now I know. Yeah, so, okay, so she's got background to her.
Yeah.
She's got.
Boy, does she have a background to her.
No, what's the word I want to say? She's got form.
She's got style. She's got class. She was there. That's how she became the nanny. I don't know why it is burst into a nanny.
I don't know where that came from. I don't even want to know where that came from. All right, so we've got a Black Canary. We have a Green Arrow. Can we just have a goddamn pilot now?
Yeah, well, I think it's coming soon, so let's hope so.
What's next?
Now, Bendis Spink.
Pardon? Bless you.
Sorry.
Gesundheit.
Bendis Spink. Sorry, I got a little cough there. Now, you probably recall we mentioned Bendis Spink last week as that comic book company that...
Oh, yes.
...is making comics just so they can film them. Well, they've actually, despite that, they seem to have gone and got the rights to a Black Ball Media comic called The New West, which was written by the very awesome Jimmy Palmiotti and art by the equally awesome Phil Noto.
Hmm.
And the book's sort of set in a a near future Los Angeles where, and I'm quoting here from the Hollywood Reporter article, where an electromagnetic pulse bomb has caused all sorts of technology to stop working. In this hostile environment, a disgraced former LAPD detective must rescue a kidnapped mayor with only a horse and a sword.
But saying, and of course, in cases of an apocalypse, you grab a samurai sword.
Absolutely.
We've got this in Walking Dead as well. The samurai sword is the first thing you grab, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, I've got four of them just hanging here in the apartment in case.
I was going to say, don't we all have one? You know?
I got mine out of a cereal packet.
All right, so this is headed for the big screen. Is that right?
It's headed for the big screen. Now, not a lot of details at the moment, but it's going to be produced by Bender Spink's Chris Bender and J.C. Spink, who... I'm guessing
isn't he an alcoholic robot?
Likes to bend. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, he likes to bend, and he's sitting there going, he goes, my ass!
Well, apparently, Bender Spink have got a bit of credit behind them because they've already done one comic book adaptation in the form of A History of Violence.
Is that them?
Yeah, and they've also got the comedy in production at the moment, Burt Wonderstone, which is getting a little bit of... which is with that pact that they made with Arcana, which we were talking about. Mm. They've also got that pact with Arcana, which was to create a line of comics which are just for film adaptation. So they're really trying to build their own little comics empire here, I think. So,
well, good luck to them. They're coming a bit late into the game.
Oh, but they're also teaming up with, I should say, Garib Sheamus, who is the Wizard magazine founder.
Oh, there's a bit of clout for them as well.
Yeah, So it's... You know, nothing to sneeze at.
No, and look, History of Violence, they really lucked out on by getting David Cronenberg in there. I think without Cronenberg, we wouldn't have had nearly the film that we had.
That's true.
So let's see what they can do with the New West.
Yes. Now, speaking of comic book adaptations,
mm-hmm.
You know what I've noticed lately, David? There's been a sort of a bit of a drought on zombie-related computer games.
I know. I haven't seen one in so long. It's got to be at least 5 minutes.
Exactly. And so, well, you know, capitalizing on that little hit, The Walking Dead, Telltale Games, who, as you know, are responsible for a number of adaptations already,
mm-hmm.
Have decided to bring out a... my mind went blank there. I decided to bring out zombies. Obviously, attacked me halfway through. I've decided to bring out a Walking Dead game, and this was announced a little while ago. But this week, we got some screenshots and a first look at the film. So there's a new website up for it as well. So if you head along to, I believe the website is at telltalegames.com/Walking Dead.
Right.
And the other connection this week, of course, with Telltale Games is that they brought out the most recent Sam & Max games, and we are covering Sam & Max this week.
So it's Sam & Max had to come back, didn't it? It had to come back into this.
It's all connected, David. All right,
before we go on. So Telltale Games have, let's see, you're saying that they've done a lot of adaptations.
They've done a lot of licensed games.
Yeah, I was just having a look. Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, Law and Order, Los Angeles.
Yes.
CSI, Deadly Intent, CSI, Hard Evidence, CSI, Fatal Conspiracy. Do you think they like CSI? CSI, Three Dimensions of Murder.
Don't forget Jeff Smith's bone.
Oh, yeah. Whoa.
My brain really has gone tonight.
Yeah, you're right. They have done a lot of adaptations. Wallace and Gromit.
Right, I've forgotten about that one.
Is one of theirs as well. You're right, and they have also done Sam & Max Freelance Police, plus Sam & Max Season 1, Sam & Max Hit the Road. I'm trying to see what else they've done here. Boy, they've Devil's Playground, Sam & Max's Devil's Playground.
Yeah, they did about 3 seasons of Sam & Max.
Sam & Max Beyond Time and Space.
Yep.
God damn.
So yeah, they're busy little bees.
They are, and now they're doing on... A really, truly unique genre like the zombies.
That's right. Now, look, the thing is, while The Walking Dead is still hot for the next 10 minutes, I guess they may as well capitalize on it.
Big question here, though, is are they going to base it on the TV series or are they basing it on the comic books?
It says it's based on Robert Kirkman's groundbreaking comic book series.
Okay, well, I'll be interested to see, because I would rather it be based on the comic book series.
Well, as I said, they've based things on comic books before. They based a game on Jeff Smith's Bone, which we'll look at in an upcoming.
I'm sorry.
Jeff Smith's Bone, meet Jodie Foster's Beaver.
That's the 12-year-old mind of mine.
I just had enough trouble with Bendis being. You lost it over Jeff Smith's Bone.
Oh, dear. All right. Okay, I'm excited. Tell me about our competition, because I didn't, you know, I'm as in the dark as our listeners are.
Before we lose it completely, right, The Walking Dead. While we're on the subject of The Walking Dead, our good friends at Hopscotch Entertainment here in Australia have given us 4 Blu-ray copies of the first season of The Walking Dead to give away to our listeners.
Where's mine?
What you need to do, David, is listen to the show. We're going to give you a question.
I never do that.
We're going to give you a question right here, right now. But what you're going to have to do is head along to my website, therealbits.com. That's therelbits.com, where I'll have a featured page set up where you can fill out a form, put in your details, and answer the following question.
All right, here we go. I'm taking notes.
The question is... If you were a zombie, who would you bite first?
What kind of question is that? So you know you're basing this in any like real fact.
No.
Okay, cool. All right, cool. So it's good.
So you can answer anything. Really, we just want you to come and listen to this show, and we can promote this great, great little series that's being put out by Hopscotch Entertainment, The Walking Dead Season 1 on Blu-ray. 4 of you can win copies to that. But
Are we putting any rules on that question, like in the show, who would they bite, or just in general?
No. Just anyone you like.
All right, cool.
So the question is, get along to therealbits.com. You can hit up, it'll be in the featured section there, so as soon as you hit the front page, you'll see it there. By the time the show goes out, it'll definitely be up there. We're going to close this one off in about, how long do you want to make this run for, David?
Let's run this for 2 weeks.
Let's run this for 2 weeks. So in 2 episodes, 2 issues time. If you've downloaded this on Sunday the 19th of February.
Because they're time travelers.
Because the time
people, people don't know we pre-record this.
That's right. When you're downloading this, we're actually going out live.
That's
every
right.
Single download.
All right. So we're talking about closing this competition on the 4th of March.
4th of March. So get your entries in quickly, and we will announce on the next show after the draw who the winners are.
Fantastic. So good luck, everybody. And what the question one more time, Richard?
Is if you were a zombie, who would you bite?
Fantastic.
It could be anybody.
And full conditions and terms and so forth will be at the site where you enter. So,
exactly right.
And our decision is final. But let me give you a hint. If you make us laugh, you probably have a better chance. No, that's not true at all. I'm making that up as I go.
There will probably be a random number draw involved in this somehow.
I think it might be. Yeah. Try and make us laugh anyway, because if you make us laugh, we might read it on the show.
Exactly. We'll read some of the best ones on the show anyway.
I think we will. All right. That's cool. All right.
Thanks again. Sorry. Thanks again to Hopscotch Entertainment for that. That's really awesome for us.
Yeah. Where's my copy?
Storm, Damon. I'll get you a copy.
All right. I guess we should go into some Sam and Max territory, huh?
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It sure is, buddy.
You crack me up, little buddy. This week's pick of the week is, of course, as we've said, Sam and Max Surf on the Highway, which is actually a collection of all the Sam and Max stuff over the past 30 years, I guess. Sam and Max have been around probably the most famous comic books characters that you've never heard of.
There's a real Fritz the Cat vibe to it. Can I tell you that?
Yeah. It's slightly cleaner, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. But it's got that kind of indie feel, that kind of irreverent indie feel to it.
Yeah. Now, Sam and Max is a creation of Steve Purcell, who gamers will know from doing artwork on things like The Secret of Monkey Island and a whole lot of those LucasArts games that were big in the late 80s and early 90s. But Sam and Max is probably his favorite and most personal creation. Sam and Max can be best described as, I guess, Sam is a six-foot dog wearing a suit and a fedora.
And carries a mighty big gun.
Who carries a mighty big gun, while Max is a short and aggressive, hyperkinetic rabbity thing.
We say rabbity thing because he has teeth.
He has teeth, and he describes himself as a lagomorph.
And neither of them have a brain cell between them.
No. And they drive around. It's a black and white comic. They drive around in a 1960 DeSoto Adventurer and just have random adventures.
And they call themselves Freelance Police.
Police, yep.
Which doesn't make any sense, but they do get calls from somebody called the Commissioner who sends them on missions.
Yes. And that's all the setup you need to know.
And from that point onwards, it is just bizarreness following bizarreness. And just when you think that they couldn't get any more bizarre, it just dives a little bit deeper into the bizarre pool. You know,
this is basically a window into my mind, David.
Just to give people an idea of what they're in for with Sam and Max, there's a panel, it's the third page of the first comic in this collection, and they pull their guns out. And I've always got them wrong now. The Max is the rabbit, is that right?
Max is the rabbit.
Max is the rabbit. So Max pulls this Luger out, and Sam pulls out his enormous gun. And Sam turns to Max and says, "You must teach me, him, Max, hey, where do you keep that gun?" And the rabbit just responds with, "None of your damn business,
Sam." None of your damn business, Sam.
And it's a running gag for the rest of the book, where it's like he just keeps pulling guns out of nowhere. And you go, where the hell did you get that from? And the rabbit is often used as a weapon himself.
Yes.
There's that one sequence where Sam literally grabs him and just smacks somebody over the head with him.
And like they're incredibly violent, Max perhaps more so than Sam. You get the sense that there's a lot of extreme violence that happens off camera that we're not privy to.
What is that? He's got that guy and he's holding his ears out and he's going, "Let me bite his head."
It's just little random things throughout this comic. Look, this is one of those things. It's really hard. There's really no story to speak of, except for the fact that they travel and have adventures.
And I love the way they travel.
Yes.
I love the fact that they'll be... as an example, I've got one here where he says, "We have to check out some nasty things halfway across the earth, Max. We're off to the Philippines." And the next panel, he says, "Well, here we are in the Philippines."
Drawn without reference material, apparently.
Yeah, because the Philippines has got flaming skulls. And
and the kangaroos pulling a cart. Yeah. And the Eiffel Tower's in the background.
So, it is a very strange... And they're serving sizzling weasel on the stick.
Yep.
With a man wearing lederhosen is serving sizzling weasel on a stick.
No, it's great. And in that particular story, I love the way that particular story ends because they meet up with some natives. They meet up with this... Sorry, it's actually a guy in a trucker's hat with kind of various dead animals and antlers attached to it. And he is leading this gang of thugs who... that Sam and Max dispatch by pushing into a volcano, which Sam says, "Phew, I feel kind of bad about all of this." Yeah, but they had torches and Frankenstein rakes.
But I do like the fact that the bad guy, the lead bad guy, I mean, we do say we are spoilers and all in this, and this is an old one, unlike Ratcatcher, the lead bad guy is about to stab Max, and he just spontaneously combusts.
Or as they say, spontaneous combustion, what a stroke of luck. For those unfamiliar with the term, spontaneous human combustion is the unexplained phenomenon by extreme increased body temperature. Adapt your wardrobe accordingly, preferably light cottons and knits.
and I like the fact that they then look at the mad crowd who's coming after me. He says, "We've got to get out of here because I don't think we can run the risk that that will happen again."
Yeah. But it's full of, like, you know, almost kind of Marx Brothers one-liners. Things like, "This mob is getting ugly. They had a head start." And it really is. I think there's a lot of that kind of Marx sort of sense of humor in it. Mm. You know, that there's running characters in there. There's this thing where, you know, anytime... a woman sort of seems to be offering any sort of advance to it, Max is completely clueless. And it's like things like, I've been authorized by the captain to give you boys anything you want. So there's this really foxy stewardess. And he's like, then bring me all the unclothed women my poor eyes can stand. Jesus, Max, take it easy. You don't even like girls. Oh, yeah. In that case, how about some more of these great peanuts? You crack me up, little buddy. And that's just one of the, I mean, it just sort of, there's just moments like this everywhere. At one point, instead of spontaneous combustion, a troop of kids in rubber diapers and a monkey comes down to save them.
That is so odd. And what does he say? He says, they actually say to the monkey who's leading the little babies, why do you need a rubber diaper anyway? And he says, because monkey butts aren't attractive.
You ever seen a chimp's rear end?
Gruesome. Yeah, that's it.
And then there's these like little things in between each of the comics. There's like these little instructional pages where Sam or Max will teach you how to, for example, build a Walther 9mm automatic out of several bars of soap. if you're in the joint, you know.
Or later on, there's one where he teaches you how to make a Max puppet so that you can freak out the kids with your own puppet shows.
Exactly. Now, the centerpiece to this whole thing, of course, is probably the longest Sam and Max comic, which was Sam and Max Freelance Police on the Road. Mm. Now, that was that one came out, I believe, in 1989.
Oh, really?
And,
okay.
That was probably it was a 3-chapter story that show what Sam and Max do on vacation, which is not that different to what they do.
They're actually ordered to vacation by the commissioner.
Because there was this sudden wave of lawfulness across the city, and the commissioner thought they were overreacting slightly because they said, "Remember that?" "Remember what we did to those neighborhood playground bullies? Remember?" He goes, "We shaved their hair off and tattooed garish wrestling masks across their heads." Which now, I love. So they go off, and
I think we should also mention at this point that every book actually has a little subtitle underneath the title where it actually says what it's based on. And I love the fact that, like, with On the Road, for example, it says based on the famed Beat Generation novel Sam and Max Drive Around in a Car by Bucky Kerouac.
Yeah, some of my favorites in there are probably based on the novella Sam and Max Meet Some Bad Guys. There's another one that's like based on the musical.
Yeah, there's some great ones, and they're really subtle because it wasn't until I was about halfway through the book I actually realized they were even there.
Yeah, based on the Broadway musical, Sam and Max Go to the Carnival.
There it is, that's the one.
So they're all throughout it as well, and so that's quite good. And I really like, the On the Road one is probably one of my first, that was back in the late 80s, and it was probably one of my first things of Sam and Max that I read. And I read it in... It was a single one-off comic, and I'm sure it was released by Comico. It was reprinted, and it was in color.
Right.
And that's where I became familiar with the characters. But I also remember reading them a lot in the back pages of LucasArts, also known as Lucasfilm Games, Once Upon a Time. They used to have a newsletter that they put out every month, and I've still got these original newsletters where they did a single strip or a one panel or a one page Sam and Max story at the back, and it was usually parodying something like their latest game, like Monkey Island or Full Throttle or any of the Lucasfilm franchises like Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
Right, right.
And if you get this collection that we're talking about, a lot of those are at the back of it in color.
There's a whole bunch of like single page color cartoons at the back.
Because they were the ones that were originally printed in color. The rest of the stuff was originally printed in black and white. One of my favorites is Sam and Max doing the Death Star trench run. where Max is basically in the R2-D2 spot. He's like, things like, Sam, it's cold out here and I'm having trouble breathing. You're a real pest today, Max. Sam, I'm ready to come in now. My head's caught on fire, Sam. Now what?
Speaking of having trouble breathing, I like the fact that when they go to the moon, Max just takes his hat off.
These are some of my favorite things, and I don't know if an audio program is the best place to describe Sam and Max, but
no, I mean you really have to read it for yourself because it is going to be What the issues that I found with it, because I wasn't a Sam and Max reader, was that it's actually quite funny. I mean, it's very funny, in fact. But what happens when you read 152 pages in a row is the joke starts to wear out.
Yeah.
And so you start to go, oh, yeah, he's saying that again. Oh, yeah, he's saying that again. You know what I mean? Whereas I can imagine reading this on a monthly basis and go and really looking forward to it. It's like Gru the Wanderer, if you remember the Sergio Aragonés
comic book
series, which was incredibly funny at the time. And I've actually been rereading it. And it's not so funny this time around, because when you read several issues in a row, you start to see similar jokes again, and it starts to wear out after a while, you know?
Exactly. And you have to remember, this stuff spans 1987 through to about 1996. Mm.
It's like reading one of those Doonesbury compilations, you know what I mean? Yeah. Where you go, yeah, it's really, really funny, but there's only so much you can take. After a while, you've got to just put it down.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of the way it's written, too. Mm. If you get it in this compilation, it is very much one of those things you can just pick up and read a couple of bits and pieces, put it down and come back to it. It's, it is you know, a product of its of a very...
It actually has, for those who are wondering what the flavor of it is, it's got a real Ren and Stimpy vibe.
It does, yeah, and it's probably pre-Ren and Stimpy.
I would imagine it is, yeah, but it's got that same kind of odd style to it, where weird things are happening in the background. Like this one shot in that on the road where they're driving along, and in the background you can actually see the rover from Lost in Space.
Yeah,
for no apparent reason.
Every panel, like even on the first page of the first panel, you could spend, you know, a day looking at all the stuff that Steve Purcell's drawn in there. He's got, like, on the very first page of Sam and Max Freelance Police in Monkeys Violating the Heavenly Temple, based on the novella Sam and Max Meet Some Bad Guys. there is, you know, there's Sam and Max strolling along, singing, and down in the corner, there's an engine being stolen by a bunch of rats. There's a monk in a monk's robe. There's a monkey in a monk's robe, and there's a lurch looking character standing next to him. There's an African woman standing in the background with one of those neck brace things.
Yeah, with a soldier in a helmet next to her.
A guy in a helmet next to her. There's somebody handing an
old man a shrunken head.
Shrunken head, yeah.
But you can't see who's handing it to him because the person's behind somebody else.
And there's a shop next to that called something at the House of Insects, what looks at it.
And there's a piano falling out of the sky.
From the cheap, filthy hotel.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's just page one.
And what is on the lunchbox of Lurch? What's it say?
It says
Lost in Space. Right.
Lost in Space, yeah.
There you go. Throwback. Callback. All right. So, look, yeah, and the On the Road is actually a really funny story. It's just a little series of vignettes all the way through. And I love the one in particular I really like is where Sam tells Max the story of the Spectre.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Why they can't stop at that restaurant. And
Stuckey's.
That's right. Why they can't stop at Stuckey's. And they tell the story, and then we're on the road, and then Max, of course, sees the Spectre, and she jumps on the car and smashes through the window, and then he wakes up. And he's like, oh, it was just a dream. And Sam immediately goes, oh, you know, you're good thing you're awake, because you're missing all the fun. A 7-foot Spectre of Evil appeared in front of the car.
I know, it's great. It's also, and a lot of people, if you remember, we played a clip at the top of the show from the 1993 game. A lot of the stuff in that game is based off Sam and Max on the Road.
Right.
So it's probably the most comprehensive of the thing. But there's all sorts of little parodies and things they do throughout it. And the thing I like, it those really grotesque monster things that Purcell draws look like something genuinely gruesome. This is what I love about his artwork as well. He'll have the very cartoonish Sam and Max, and Max at one point there's a panel I love in one of them which describes their looks quite nicely. Which is somebody says calls Sam McGruff, and he says, "Did you hear what he called me? I hate that." And he goes, "Let's sneak up to his room later and drain all the liquid out of his body." And then Max says, "If he calls me Hello Kitty, I'll plug him." and they've got these very cartoonish characters, and everybody else has got this kind of vaguely realistic look to them, like sort of hyper grotesque sort of thing, but it's in a very gritty, kind of realistic world. It almost reminds me of, and there's no surprise because they work together a lot, with the grotesque monsters and things of Mike Mignola's Hellboy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, well.
And they
really
did work together a lot. And there is that kind of, you look at, there's when they capture this giant monster thing.
I was going to say, in the supermarket, when they're doing
yeah,
the spirit
in
ghost.
The Beast from the Cereal Aisle, based on McElraith's Guide to Silly Arts Paranormal Phenomenon, Volume 2. that's when they catch that. That monster there looks very much like a genuinely frightening creature.
Yeah.
Straight out of something like Hellboy.
Which they then turn into a ride outside the supermarket.
Yeah. One of those coin-operated spring rides.
It says ride Skippy.
Yeah. Then they find their car's gone, so they jack a fire truck.
Yeah. Well, the cars are gone. It's been burnt out. Because
yeah.
they somehow got this Ferrari. I also love when they put the car in for repair at one point on the road story. And they come back, and the guy said, yeah, because you've got this work order, it's going to cost you all these $1,000. He goes, oh, we can't afford that. Yeah. And just handy, he goes, here's the stuff we smuggled out of Mexico. Hopefully you can get something for it.
Right, which is basically lacquered animals. Yeah. Which was their grand plan, to go to Mexico and get a whole lot of lacquered animals and sell them on the open market.
It's a very strange comic book.
It's
fun, though. It's been a lot of fun reading it this week. I found myself torn because, of course, I was reading this, and I'm also trying to read Powers Volume 3, and I kept going, which one do I go to? Which one do I go to? But I did get through it, and it's a lot of fun. I liked it a lot. I quite liked their moon trip.
Moon trip's very cool.
I like the fact that the leader of the moon looks like the Wizard of Oz, but in rat form.
There's a lot of things in rat form in Steve Purcell's work.
I like when they get into their Ferrari and there's actually somebody under the dash trying to steal it.
Yes.
And they just throw him out of the car.
Just poke him with the club lock and throw him out.
And then we got Sam going, sorry, Max, no time for petty indulgences. Because he says, shall we back over him, Sam?
The next panel's like, Max, in America, it's customary to drive on the right. It's turning into a damn police state, Stan.
So, look, it's got some really funny stuff in it. It is well worth having a look at. My suggestion would be, is if you haven't read it, though, read it in chunks.
Yeah.
Because you'll get a lot more out of it rather than a compressed reading. Read each story about, a few days apart from each other, because then you've spread that flow out and you'll keep that sense of humor going.
I would agree. Even though I've read this many times, reading this again, I do agree with you that it does lose something in the compressed format.
Yeah, because I think if you've read it, I think your first reading is always going to be your most, it's going to be the reading that sits with you. And so for you, you would have read this in serialized form.
Mm.
So now you can read it in compressed form because your memories are always going to be of that serialized form.
Exactly.
Whereas with me, I'm reading in a compressed form, and so it doesn't have quite the same impact.
No, exactly right.
Mm. You crack me up, little pal.
Is pronto a real word, Sam?
All right. I'm going to say go read it.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
I agree.
Absolutely. What's our book next week, Richard?
Next week we're going sort of old school but new school, but not really. We're doing Fantastic Four Season 1, which was Marvel's quite recent look back at the first year of the Fantastic Four. It's kind of like the year one kind of things that DC do.
Yeah, so it's not actually a reprinting. It is a whole new story though, right?
I think that the book did come out in singles, but it's just been collected for the first time.
But what I'm saying is it's like a retelling of their origin.
Oh, no, it's a retelling. Yeah. It's a complete retelling.
So it's a retelling of their origin. And this is not to be confused with this new kind of reboot that they've just done.
That's right.
Oh, Marvel, you're starting
the season one superhero graphic novels. There was a whole line of them that were launched last year around July-ish. They announced them.
Mm.
This particular one is written by Robert Aguirre Sacasta, who did Stephen King's The Stand and is also responsible for Glee, and David Marquez, who did Secret Warriors. But there's also other ones floating around. There's X-Men Season 1, there's Daredevil Season 1, And Spider-Man Season 1, of course, okay, as well. Well, so.
We'll have a look at Fantastic Four Season 1 and see how they pan out. We might go for the rest of them as well.
Yeah, well, I thought we hadn't done any fan for it, so it was a good show.
No, and I was reading some of the... I even forgot what it's called now because it's such a stupid... What's it called again? Foundation of... the new FF. What was it?
Future Foundation.
Future Foundation. What a stupid title.
It's stupid.
Thank God they've gone back to Fantastic Four. Thank you, Storm, for coming back.
Yay.
Yay. No more Future Foundation. Although, no, actually, I shouldn't say that because Future Foundation is still going. But it's actually become, you know what? It's a book that George Lucas would like because it's actually the kids.
George Lucas. Yay.
It's the kids.
It's for kids. It's for, you know,
no,
the kids.
No, not for kids. It's the kids.
Oh, it's their kids.
It's their kids.
Oh, of course.
So that's the Future Foundation. From what I can tell, it looks like the Future Foundation is now like their kids carrying that on.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Exactly. There's a book I don't really want to read.
Now, after that, so we're doing Fantastic Four Season 1 next week, but just to give you a sneak preview, in the weeks following that, we've worked out our order. We're going to be doing John Carter, Warlord of Mars, The Fall of Barsoom, which is one of the prequel books to the film, which I have seen, but I'm embargoed from talking about.
Yeah, I'm seeing it in a week, so...
Then there is, following that, we'll be doing the very classic story Mouse by Art Spiegelman.
And that's actually M-A-U-S, not
M-A-U-S,
not M-O-U-S-E.
Exactly. And then after that, we'll be going at the very opposite end of the spectrum by doing Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8.
That is kind of a real swing, isn't it?
We like to keep it between from Sam and Max to Mouse in three easy steps.
And then back to Buffy.
It all comes back to Whedon.
It does all come back to Whedon eventually, doesn't it? All right. Well, we got some reading ahead of us.
You certainly have, David.
We do indeed. And I've got in between all of this, I've still got to finish issue sixes of the New 52 and the Stealth reboot of Marvel, and of course, Powers Volume 2.
Clones, Dave. We need clones.
Clones, absolutely. Do you know what inspired me to start reading Powers Volume 2?
You know what inspired me to develop my clones?
Do you know what inspired me to start reading Powers Volume 2, other than the fact that Powers Volume 1 was great, was the fact that a new issue of Powers from Volume 3, so issue 8, I think it is, just got released.
Ooh.
And there hasn't been a new issue in a long time because on the front cover of the issue, it actually says, "We're back." So it's like I saw.
Bendis is a busy man.
He is. I saw that issue and I went, that's right. I still got a volume two to read before I can read that one. So, yes, that's inspired me to start reading volume two.
But, excellent.
It's very, very good. And I will finish it eventually. Out. It's another 30 odd issues, but I will finish it. So,
fair enough.
Anyway, Richard, I think that's a show.
It sounds like one.
Where can people find out more about you on the internet?
They can find out more about me at therealbits.com. That's therealbits.com, where you can also find this week's featured giveaway, which is the first season of The Walking Dead on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic. And you can find me at geekactually.com. You can also find me on Twitter at David McVeigh is my name. We also have a Twitter account for the site as well, but you can find all that by going to geekactually.com. That's about where you'll find me. You'll find me everywhere. I'm on Facebook and all sorts of places. And my son is gesticulating wildly in the background here. Oh, he wants to be pushed. Shall we
What's
push
he
him?
On?
I don't know. Shall we promote him? He wants to be promoted.
Go on, we got time.
We got some time. You can find the wonderful film Smile, and in that film you'll hear stuff like...
It's really dark in here.
And
you'll also hear stuff like...
Hey, okay, just don't shoot me.
And stuff like this.
Give us all your money.
And you can find all of that at youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh. And the show is called what again? It's called...
Batman.
There you go.
And all three of those voices you can hear weekly on our other podcasts, Film Actually and Film Actually News, both of which are available on iTunes.
This week's episode is going to be very interesting. Can I tell you that?
Because yes, it will. If anyone turns up for it,
this is going to be very interesting because our co-host, Josh Philpott, is currently overseas. Now, he says he packed his microphones, so we're going to see if this actually works. So this
otherwise,
be,
he'll be going up to somebody, David, and he'll be saying...
he'll be saying,
give us all your money.
Yes.
So we can buy a new microphone.
Absolutely. So we're going to have a truly international film, actually, this week.
Wow.
Wow, how about that?
It'd be from Randwick to Kingsgrove to New Zealand.
So it ought to be a bit of fun. All right, I think that's a show. I think we're going to call it on that, don't you?
I think we can call it, David.
All right, Richard, I will see you next week.
See you then.
Oh, wait. We forgot one thing. People can write to this show, remember?
They can write to this show.
They can send feedback to this show. It's at comics@geekactually.com, or you can leave us a voicemail and have that played on air if you're interesting in under a minute.
And if you really like the show, please go to iTunes and leave us a rating and leave us some feedback, and we'll read out some of the best ones on the show.
Absolutely. And that voicemail line is 02801133. Oh, God, I forgot me a number. 801133167, I think it is. But you can also find that on geekactually.com. There's a contact form that actually has all of the numbers and everything there. And if you are international, you can just use our Skype ID, geekactually. It all goes to the same place. So there you go. All right, now we can say bye, Richard.
David.
Talk to you next week.
See ya.
Bye.